Welcome to the Press Start Podcast, Press Start Australia's weekly video game discussion podcast. I'm your host, Ewan, joined today by my fellow gamers and co-hosts, Shannon.
Hello.
James.
Hello.
And Brody.
Hey.
Brody, it feels like it's been a while since we had you on the show, but maybe we just missed you last week.
I think it's been a few weeks, maybe.
Has it? Really?
Oh, well, you haven't slowed down. He was on PlayStation, wasn't he?
No, I wasn't.
No, not last week to cover the conference, no. I'm sure you had all sorts of heaps and opinions on it as
I'm
well,
sure, right? I was missed.
Well, you've not been quiet in your absence from the show. You've been busy smashing out reviews this week. I am, of course, eager to speak to you about Deathloop in a moment. But first, let me ask you about Toem, which you reviewed and gave a 7.5. It's not a game I've had on my radar at all, to be honest. Can you tell us what it's about and who it might be for?
Okay, so it's basically, Toem, I would say, and I made these comparisons a lot throughout the review, but I would say it draws on both, like the mainline Pokemon games as well as Pokemon Snap. So ultimately, it's called Toem, a photo adventure. So it's a really cutesy indie photo adventure, really. Yeah, the whole point of the game is to seek out this natural phenomenon in nature called Toem. And along the way, you visit like these four distinct, really cute regions. And like it's more of a puzzle game while being a collectathon. Like it's got the Pokedex aspect to it, where you can photograph like animals in the world and stuff like that. But it's ultimately puzzle solving. Like they give you like vague hints on how to do like bits and pieces, like photograph this. Like it's almost like a riddle in nature. Like it sort of like gives you a vague direction to go in, and then it's all pretty simple. And it is aimed probably at like younger kids or tweens or something like that. But
when you say photo adventure, is that like a Pokemon Snap sort of thing? You're trying to get these photos?
Yeah. So right. Yeah, that's right. So the main mechanics of the game is you just basically explore and take photos of things. Like it's
sure.
Yeah, so that's what I mean in terms of it combining like it's got the mainline exploration of a Pokemon game mixed with the photo aspect of it, I guess. So it'd be similar to Bugsnax. Granted, I didn't get heaps into Bugsnax. I probably played it for half an hour, but that's it probably feels similar to that.
Right.
All in all, it's fun. I think it's a bit derivative. It's accessible. All in all, like while being a bit of fun, I found it, yeah. Largely the things that bothered me the most was that it was quite derivative, and ultimately, while I liked the art and it was pretty cute, after a while it was a bit forgettable. So, all in all, it's a fun, cute game. If you've got 8 hours to spare on a weekend, it's worth to crash through. But
okay, I didn't appreciate it was that long. I thought I heard that it was
a chill 8 hours. Yeah, if you've got a work day on a weekend to crash through this thing. But it's all right. Yeah,
I feel like game releases are getting spicier and spicier by the day at the moment. I'm not sure if this is one I'm going to make time for, but we'll see. I feel like I owe it to James to play Alan Wake when that comes out. Like I think
you
I
owe it to everyone.
But speaking of hot games of the moment, you also reviewed Deathloop. Shannon, I'm gonna ask you first. Have you played any Deathloop? I haven't taken any stock.
I haven't. Obviously, I was moving and took a little bit longer to set up my PS5, and then I've gone to start it like 3 times this week at like 10 o'clock, and I've just not been in the mood to start anything. I've just gone to TikTok instead.
I'm sure we'll get into it, but I feel like it is again the benefits from like being able to kind of have slightly longer play sessions with it each time as well. So that's probably wise. Brody, I'm going to circle right back to you. You also reviewed Deathloop in the past week. You gave it a glowing review with a score of 9, I think. I think I got that right. Yeah. What were the game's highlights in your mind?
Without sort of retreading all the things I already said in the preview, well, I mean, that's sort of unavoidable, I guess, but as a shooter, it's just like super tight, super satisfying. Like it's got that Arcane brand of like snappy, like gunplay that they had in Prey, like mixed with like the player mobility and exploration of something like Dishonored, I guess, or even Prey to a degree. It's just got a really well-built world. All the characters are really great. It's super stylish. Like I didn't actually realize that the art director, whose name escapes me, apparently he worked on the Half-Life series.
Sebastian Maton?
Yeah, apparently he worked on the Half-Life series, I believe. So, right. And I didn't make that correlation in my mind that there were some like City 17 vibes that I had with this, which make a lot of sense now. So the balance between like all the gameplay elements is really like it's a nice mix. Like the mystery is great. I like the way they handled like the time loop aspect of it, and it does the roguelike thing without being punishing. Like, I haven't, like, when Returnal came out, you heard all the buzz about, like, we keep getting crashes and then it ruins our runs and we have all this loss and all that sort of stuff. But this game, like, you know, auto saves between districts and stuff, so it keeps all that, so there's no risk there.
Yeah.
The PvP stuff is really cool, the way it's integrated. Like, it's not, I wouldn't say it's like a main feature of the game, but it's a fun aside that you can sort of turn to once you complete the campaign and all that sort of stuff. I guess it's not even like a criticism, but the most minor gripe I had was with the murder puzzle aspect of it. Like, the way they sort of deal with the leads and all the hints and all that sort of stuff, it does feel very hand-holdy. Like, it doesn't leave a lot for you to actually work out yourself, which I think in the end probably is good, because it would have been alienating to a point of being, you know, like, overly difficult, obtuse, and it would have pushed a lot of people away. So while it's a negative in my review, that's more of a personal thing rather than actually a criticism of the game.
I think you're 100% right with that, because that's certainly, like, I enjoyed the fact that it is a bit more hand-holdy. Like, I feel like it's still allowing me to kind of connect the piece of the puzzle and feel like I'm actually kind of piecing it together. But when really, like, the game is very cleverly kind of guiding you from step to step.
On the whole, like, it's just a genuinely fresh first-person shooter. Like, it's a breath of fresh air. Like, it doesn't tend to... it doesn't lean into the tropes that most shooters do. It's very much a front runner currently for my game of the year. So, yeah.
I was curious about that.
Enjoy it a lot.
James, I think you've been able to lay your hands on the first kind of few hours of the game. Is that right?
Yeah. I think up until when you can play as Juliana.
Okay, cool.
So that's like, I think, the first two missions, technically. But I just want to put like a solid like 3 hours aside and just like crack it open, you know. Like, I feel like there's just so much to like learn and take in about it.
I think you're probably at the point now where it's sort of gone, all right, you go now and
it's
work
like
it out.
I wasn't paying attention, so like I kind of am like, maybe I should start again because I definitely am like, oh shit. But yeah, the feel of it is like very like Dishonored, I think, like a faster Dishonored. It's almost like, kind of makes me feel like it's like what We Happy Few kind of wanted to be with the vibe. I don't know, like the kind of like retro-y kind of style to it. But yeah, as a game, I think like it has, like, I mean, I know everyone loves it, so it obviously is good, but like I feel like it has huge potential to be one of my favorites for sure. The only thing that I at the moment was a bit like weird about was like I invaded somebody as Juliana and they killed me, and then that was like it. Well, which I understand from a balance perspective, obviously you can't just keep invading, but I would love to have just been able to like say with a friend, like just keep going back in and trying to fuck them up.
You would have been very annoying.
What I wanted to be like. But
there should be a cooldown at least.
I had a thought though, you could potentially play this game co-op.
Yeah, because you, as Juliana, I think you can kill, like, NPCs.
Yeah, and you could, like...
Oh, not, really?
You know what I mean? Like, you could make, like, a deal with your cult friend. And, like...
Can you speak to each other, though, when you're, like, invading
Invading a friend...
Yeah, so you can invite friends.
I've got mine set to friends only, so I know if another player comes in and kills me, I've got a group chat to jump into and start bitching about.
The only downside is, aside from, like, unlocking outfits and stuff, there's no real incentive to play as Juliana.
Yes.
Like, except for the satisfaction of the hunt. So, I mean, you'd be teaming up just to be a good friend.
That being said, I'm surprised how many people I've spoken to that are playing this game that have already given Juliana a go. I haven't yet. Like, I'm kind of just wanting to experience the game as it's the story of the game, I suppose. I know so many people that have parked the story for like a good little bit to experience the Juliana.
Playing as Juliana won't ruin anything story wise if you want to give it a go.
I might need to give it a shot. So like the both of you, I'm absolutely loving the game, and I definitely see this emerging as a front runner in my kind of game of the year considerations. I've seen it described as like a murder puzzle, but in a lot of ways I'm finding the gameplay a bit of like a murder sandbox to kind of come back to the same areas time and time again, albeit with various differences throughout the day. Like, I'm finding like new and inventive ways to progress through the levels and yet defeat the enemies. And I love like how kind of immediately rewarding the game can be as well. Like you can all too easily stumble across new things that offer some sort of advantage or like are a new kind of discovery that might kind of have a payoff later in the game. Mm-hmm. And I like the way that it sets itself up with the Residium that you can kind of very quickly like start...
Power yourself up.
Yeah, powering yourself up and like saving abilities and weapons and stuff so that each loop they're there in your inventory again. And kind of I think about where the point where James is now, like you kind of do hone in on a couple of visionaries that you can go and get the slabs with. And so that I kind of made that my first objective was like, okay, I'm going to get some slabs and I'm going to preserve those. I've always got these kind of powers. And already like I'm starting to feel like the enemies that are initially presented to you aren't nearly so scary.
I think the game does handle progression really, really well. It's similar to Hades in that way. Like they do it in different ways, but the way they let you sort of carry over abilities and powers and even guns, like it's really cool. Like it's just Arkane are just the fucking masters of game design at the minute. Like this game is just so layered, it's so just tight. Crazy.
Like it's faultless. By the way, I'm loving following Dinger on Twitter, the game director, and seeing him share clips of invading people's games as Juliana. It's amazing. Yeah. But yeah, on your point there, Brody, like the fact that you know you can go to a waypoint, collect a piece of intel, and then suddenly the difficulty ramps up, and whether or not you make it back to the tunnels with all your Residium, like that's kind of where the challenge is. But if worse comes to worse and you die, you've lost the Residium, you restart the loop, but you've still got to that waypoint and collected the piece of information which allows you to kind of progress the story along. And I think that's just like such an excellent balance. You can tell I'm having a lot of fun with it. I shared a clip on Twitter last night of me chaining a bunch of enemies together with the Nexus slab and then just headshotting one of them and the whole room full of people just dropping dead. So good. Shannon, has this got you all excited? You keen to play more?
I must admit, like, for all I've seen of it, I still don't really know what the core loop of the game is. So I think from that point of view, like, I'm keen to jump in at some point and see. I've got a feeling it won't be for me, like, long term, but I'm keen to jump in and check it out.
I feel like it is still a hard sell, like just the looping nature of it. I don't know, Brody, if you've like had kind of conversations with friends about the game or whatever, but like those kind of anecdotal stories, I feel like it's still hard to sell the game because of the looping mechanic. I've been trying to tell people like it's like Dishonored and Bioshock. It's much more like those games.
Like I'm not surprised they had a hard time marketing the game. Like it's hard to explain in a way.
Yeah. I also didn't realize like Arkane games were so divisive. Like a lot of people didn't like Dishonored 1 and 2 from what I've read in our groups and stuff, which surprised me a little bit.
A lot of people are tasteless, Shannon. That's what it is.
That's it. Yeah, true.
All right. Well, let's crack on with the day's news. And we've got some unfortunate game delays to address. Those being Battlefield 2 and Dying Light 2, which have both been delayed this past week. Battlefield to November 19th. And Dying Light until the 4th of February 2022. I might have said Battlefield 5. I meant Battlefield 2042. I've been playing Rocksmith. Battlefield again. I've got it all mixed. Rocksmith is also delayed too. Oh no, disaster. Shannon, Battlefield now comes out sandwiched between Call of Duty Vanguard and Halo Infinite. My question to you is, do you think it stands a chance?
It's weird, right? I still think there's the most hype for Battlefield, and I think Call of Duty is just going to sell regardless for like Warzone and everything else. And I feel like potentially Battlefield and Halo are probably both a bit worse for wear, like being a week or two away from each other now. But I think given Halo's on Game Pass and Battlefield has done enough to get people excited, like all three of them should be fine. I think. I don't know. Maybe Battlefield does suffer because Halo is on Game Pass and people won't want to shell out $100 for just a multiplayer game.
Yeah, I think that is still the risk with Battlefield. Brody, you were nodding along with that. You agree?
I mean, I was sort of paying attention. if the salient point was that... I'm just going to skip to the question that you were going to ask me about what I'm likely going to be playing over that period, all right?
It's fine. Defer to the show notes.
Yeah. Just, I'm panicking. So, I probably will skip Battlefield now. Like, I don't have interest in a game that's purely multiplayer. It's not really my bag.
Yeah.
So, and the fact now that it is Like, I guess I didn't have interest in it to begin with.
I was going to say, did you want to play it anyway?
Well, it depends. Like, if I could play, like, a, you know, a 10-hour trial on EA Play or something like that, I might give it a go just to... Because I'm a sucker for tornadoes in games, so, like, all those... all those videos of the storms and stuff had me a bit excited.
That's why you liked Alan Wake.
What was that?
That's why you like Alan Wake.
That's right. And, oh, well, I don't like Just Cause, but they've got tornadoes too. Nevertheless,
if there was a Wizard of Oz game, you'd be there.
I love the movie, so sell me on it, Big Daddy. Yeah, so I mean, like, I might give it a trial, but ultimately, I'm going to be playing Call of Duty and Halo. Like,
yeah, they run into each other pretty nicely now.
But that said, I think all these games, like Shannon said, I think have their individual audiences. Like, there's people who will play Battlefield. There's people who will play Call of Duty, which sells well every year.
I think actually, I've thought about it a bit more, and I think COD, like, now that COD has the jump, I think Battlefield will lose a few people to just whoever wants to buy, like, the first FPS that comes out. But I still think they'll jump to Battlefield a few weeks later, potentially, unless COD really grabs
them.
That's
what I see myself doing.
I don't have any concerns for Halo. Like, I don't think Halo is going to be phased at all by it because of the free-to-play nature of it and the fact it's on Game Pass. So if you're in that ecosystem, you're not really paying for it in the end, are you? So
this might be specific to, like, me and the guys that I game with these first-person shooters, but I feel like I could have won them over to Battlefield ahead of Call of Duty, and now it's going to be very hard to, like, pry Call of Duty out of their hands and sell them on Battlefield, because, like, that's where, you know, I've always been much more of a Battlefield fan, and I can't wait for that to come out. But you kind of do need some, like, situational benefits to lure Call of Duty fans kind of over to Battlefield.
And I think that would have been really hard for the team, because I think they definitely wanted to get the jump on, like, Call of Duty and Halo and come out in October. Like, that would have been a big deal for that game, I think.
Yeah, because these are the first, like, next-gen kind of specific first-person shooters, right? Like, we're in this kind of echelon. I feel like you're right, Shannon. They could have won some people over initially by coming out first, but alas. James, Dying Light has a bit of a similar issue. Launching in a stacked Q1 of 2022 now, amongst games like Elden Ring, Pokemon Legends Arceus, and Horizon Forbidden West. How do you see this shaking out? Do you think Dying Light 2 is still going to find an audience?
Yes. I think it will.
Good. I'm glad to hear it.
yeah, I mean, like, let me just quickly pull up those games for next year. But, yeah, like, I think they're all different games. Like, and what, so Pokemon's January, Dying Light's February. Oh, Horizon, yeah, Saints Row. Yeah, I don't know.
I feel like Horizon and Saints Row especially see kind of speaking to a similar sort of audience, being it's kind of story-driven, open world.
I think as well, like, Horizon and Saints Row are a little bit newer as well. Like, we've kind of been listening to about Dying Light for about 2 decades, and now, like, it's, like, actually coming. I don't know. I feel like the vibe was, like, cool. Like, I don't know. Like, it doesn't... And zombies,
there's,
like,
a lot of hesitance about Dying Light, I think, is what you're trying to say, potentially. Like, there's people aren't super sold on it at the moment.
Yeah, I mean...
Saints Row is in very much the same boat, I suppose.
I'm so confused about Dying Light. Like, I saw it, like, 2 years ago at Gamescom, and it looked pretty good. So, like, where is it?
I think it's, like, on the record now that it's had some development issues, right?
I think there's been problems.
Expanding. Do you guys, speaking of that February, which is obviously very stacked, like, you've got Sifu as well in there, which we didn't mention. Like, it's very busy. Do you think anything's going to slide from there? Anything going to bump, get scared, and run?
I think Elden Ring is probably the, like, the number one. I think Pokemon is generally pretty safe. Horizon, you would think, is safe. Saints Row, I guess, could as well. Yeah, a few of them could.
Probably Dying Light
could easily bring again, I reckon.
January.
You don't think Rainbow Six will make January? Surely that's got to come out now.
What do you mean? Like, I was so sure that Dying Light was coming out in December.
Back a couple of times. fair.
I reckon Horizon's the only lock there.
I could still see Horizon shifting, and I could definitely see Saints Row shifting too. It still feels very early days for Saints Row.
Nothing is safe, is what we've learned.
I don't think they're going to be intimidated by Dying Light 2 being there, though. I think they're, especially not Horizon. I feel like Horizon's a lock. Like, people are going to buy that game regardless, where I feel like Dying Light is still the kind of game where people are going to wait for the reviews and kind of see how that shakes out, especially with how prolonged its development has been. But I'm so excited for that game still, too, as well. Like, I really hope it all pans out. console updates. There's been a couple of them this week as well. The news is kind of paired up quite nicely this week, or rather oddly. Let's start with the Switch, which the update that came out is finally allowing you to connect Bluetooth headphones to the device. James, what is your reaction to this? So there's a lot of people making out that it's some sort of life-changing feature.
I feel sorry for the people who make the Genki products. Like, they're just, like, out of business now.
Maybe. Those are the little, like, adapters, you mean?
They might have to pivot to something else. But, yeah, I think, like, Bluetooth is quite slow anyway. There's, like, noticeable... I haven't tried it on my Switch, but there's noticeable lag for audio, right? I don't know.
You'd have to be, like, a hardcore...
Okay.
Audio person, I think.
Yeah. I think it's cool. I think it's really weird that they've done that, but then you can't do, like, say, like, Bluetooth voice, so, like, you can't use, like, a headset. Yeah. Proper wireless with the Switch.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so it's just audio, which is, like, so Nintendo. Like, it's like, what a cool idea, but... And then, like, there's something,
there's
you know.
There's a massive caveat. Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, but I think it's cool. I don't know why it took this long for them to decide to do it. I think... When we had this discussion a while ago with Steve, and I think we both guessed that it was because they were using all the Bluetooth bandwidth for 8 controllers, and they've obviously decided that that might not be the case for everyone. So when you use it now, you just have less controllers that you can use with the Switch. So I think like...
You guys were spot on then.
Kind of like a software kind of thing. The hardware was fine. It was just a software thing. But I think
it's cool. I saw so many people being like, I can't believe there was Bluetooth in this system the whole time and Nintendo weren't using it. Like, the controllers use Bluetooth. Yeah.
I was jumping to their defense because I'm fairly sure I learned this lesson.
Come on.
I was like, I thought they were like infrared or something. What is
infrared?
Like...
Infrared?
I since researched this. I don't know. I assume there's like multiple like wireless communication.
You've got to point them at the TV.
Not everything is Bluetooth.
In line with your Switch.
Well, and so I was doing some Googling. I'm like, what was the wireless technology that Wiimotes used? Turns out it was also Bluetooth.
Incredible.
Ewan's 12 years old.
I thought they were like remote control cars or something. I don't know. I'm not pretending I know how wireless communication works.
Because you can't.
Apparently you guys are all experts, though.
Anyway, I think it's cool. I think it shows that maybe Nintendo is listening a bit. Like, even though it still has the Nintendoism of it not being able to use voice, like, at least it's something 4 years later.
Yeah.
And I like that.
It's still a convenience, for sure. Speaking of still no themes, the PS5 also had a console update, which finally allows internal memory to be added, those being the NVMe SSDs that we've been talking about at length. It also included a slew of UI refinements. A slew of UI? Why did I write that? That's impossible to say. We've spoken about it a bit before, Shannon, but seeing as now it's more of like a pressing issue and people are having to make purchasing decisions, like what should people be looking out for? What should they be buying?
Well, I'm seeing a lot of people buying SSDs without heat sinks, which isn't the end of the world, but it just means that you have to then look for a heat sink, and I don't know which one to recommend. So my first recommendation would be to get one with a heat sink. So it's the Aorus 7000?
Yeah.
Aorus 7000 FireCuda 530 with heat sink, or the WD heat sink that name escapes me. I think they're all pretty similar performance-wise. I think I saw a few, like, throttling issues with the Aorus one, which is the cheapest one.
Oh,
but
shit.
Still, like, nothing. No, I don't think it's anything. I just think, like, performance and temps are a little bit worse than the FireCuda, but
right.
Obviously it's the cheapest one, so you get what you pay for, Yui, if you want to cheap true. Out, then that's
my,
what you
my
get.
Sort of thinking was that I'd buy, like, the cheapest one now, and then, like, as, like, come down in cost over time, I can upgrade it and, like, throw that drive into my PC or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, that being said, I know the FireCudas are, like, pretty widely available. Like, you can get those from EB and JB, I think. They're up for pre-order.
Yeah, I think that seems to be the one. That, like, they were the first ones that said they're PS5 compatible, and they're definitely... Yeah. I feel like Seagate's pretty really, right? reliable. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
The other ones have kind of, like, fit the bill. I mean, the 1 terabytes aren't too... prohibitively costly, but 2 terabytes and the 4 terabytes that Seagate
and yeah
are
I,
like,
I feel like it's worth saying. I feel like a lot of people think that you're replacing your hard drive, but you're not. Like, this is in addition to your 800 gigs in your console. Like, this is a spare slot in the PS5 that you're adding
yeah
to space wise
yeah, you're not just sacrificing good. What's there.
I
yeah.
haven't. Have you done it yet, Ewan? Because I haven't. Just
well, it's not arrived yet. I'm still waiting for my drive. Yeah, but as soon as it does, I will report back. Don't you worry. Those drives that we all mentioned, they're all contained with an article on the website with links and all that. So if you're on the market for one, they are like selling out. So probably don't wait around too long. Get your name down for a pre-order for one of them. It's not already available. Yeah, double check the website for all those links. Brody, seeing as you've spent a bit of time on your PlayStation recently playing Deathloop, I don't know like if we've spoken to much about using your PS5. You tend to be spend more time on your Xbox, I think. How are you finding the digital only PS5? Is your memory filled right up? Is that posed much of an issue?
Yeah, despite not obviously, like you said, I don't use it as my primary console, but I pretty much only use it to review things, but. I have had to start like deleting games to make space for other games and all that sort of stuff, but it's not a huge inconvenience for me currently, and I won't be rushing out to get one of. I was speaking to Shannon about it. I was asking for his recommendations, and he's in a roundabout way told me just to wait till they come down in price, which is probably very very sensible from Father Shannon. So I'll be waiting.
Certainly, if you're like looking for anything like 2 terabytes or bigger, yeah, wait.
Yeah, go big or go home. Why
I think if you're someone who plays COD like every day and you have like, well, that takes up what, over 200 gigs, 250 gigs. Like if you're someone that wants that installed and like an NBA that has like 150 gigs, like it's probably worth getting something.
Yeah,
now.
That's my struggle. Like I've got mates that want to play Rocket League one day and then Apex the next and Call of Duty the day after that. So it's like having all of these games installed into hand is a lot of management. I'm constantly deleting and reinstalling stuff. It's a bloody pain. So yeah, the first opportunity I got, I was like, this is happening. Anyhow, that about does it for the news, but I'm going to fire a rapid fire question at the three of you. In light of like a well-reviewed games coming out recently, stuff like Psychonauts 2, Life is Strange, True Colors, which we talked about last week, and Deathloop as well, obviously. What is front of your mind is your current game of the year? James, let's start with you.
No. Mine's shit. It's a James answer.
No More Heroes.
Yeah, I think so.
Guessed it.
Yeah, like No More Heroes is like just ticked all the right boxes for me, you know?
I was talking to someone who said the same thing. It was Harry was saying the same thing. Brody, what about you? Is it Deathloop?
Yeah, toss up between Deathloop or maybe Death's Door. I like Death's Door a lot.
See, I want to play that too.
even Returnal. Like, well, maybe I've got recency bias with the other two, but Returnal was good
Steady
as well.
Steady on. That's three answers. This is a rapid fire round. Shannon, what's yours?
I really can't remember what I played, but I'd have to say like favorite game of the year has been Ratchet and Clank, but I wouldn't say it's like blown me away. That's just like the one that I really enjoyed playing through from start to finish, and Returnal as well was good.
Yeah. Having beaten Psychonauts 2 this week, I think that's crept up to top of my list. It's rapid fire. I'm going to leave it there. We can explain why on another episode. But now is time for What the Wiki, the Press Start podcast game show, where the previous week's winner reads part of a Wikipedia page for an unknown game, and the contestants must guess the game. The first to guess 2 games correctly wins the round and takes home the points. And speaking of those points, last week they're rewarded to Shannon, who has very like narrowed the gap between him and James quite substantially. James is on 11, Shannon on 10. Brody, myself, tied on 5, Harry on 3, Kieran on 1, and Stephen on 0. Pwah. But Shannon, seeing as you won last week, hosting duties are yours for today.
I'm counting on you, Brody and Ewan. More
so
Brody.
Like, so
has he rigged it? Like, has he rigged it for us?
Yeah, it's like, so, like, not even hiding.
They're Brody's
anymore.
Favorite 3 games
again. We recently had, like, the first 3 games I reviewed, the first 3 games that Brody reviewed. Brody, I think you'd be pleased to hear that I think I guessed yours.
Well done.
I got your back.
All right, let's do it.
You're a fan.
The game is a first-person shooter video game developed by Criterion Games and published by Electronic Arts.
James?
It was... Brody, you got him first there. Oh. He did. Ewan, he did.
He did. I thought I heard the B first.
I'm not 100% sure, but I'm going to say Black.
It is Black. Well done, Brody. Your
no
favorite
way.
Game
I had
of all
no
time.
Idea that Criterion had to develop a first-person shooter. There you go. That's PS2 era, wouldn't it, Black?
Yeah. And original Xbox, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah, PS2 and Xbox.
Everyone raves about it. I've tried to play it earlier this year, and it was hot trash. I didn't like it. Maybe it hasn't aged well. I think
it was
just
because it was like a first of its kind.
It hasn't aged well.
Anyway, I don't know who's going to get this.
Neither do I.
The game is a beat-em-up arcade video game produced by Konami and released in 1991. It is a sequel to another arcade game.
Yeah. Streets of Rage 2.
No. It is a side-scrolling beat-em-up game based on a 1987 animated series. Yes, James.
Is it Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Mutants in Time? Turtles in Time.
You can't do that.
Yeah. I'm going to pay it. I'll pay it. He corrected himself.
Massive stitch up.
Shit. I've only got three games.
First round.
Hopefully it doesn't go into a tiebreak for your benefit, Shannon.
The game is an action-adventure game developed and published by Nintendo for the Nintendo 64 home console. It was released in 2000 as the sixth main installment in a popular Nintendo series and was the second to use 3D graphics.
Brody? Yep. I didn't hear half of it. You're cutting out.
Not really.
Donkey Kong 64.
No.
Balls. Come on, Yui. Is there another paragraph?
I know what the franchise is, but my knowledge of it is limited.
Are you going to keep reading?
I feel like I'm going to embarrass myself.
Yeah, yeah. Designed by a creative team led by... Oh, I'm not going to read that.
He's just come, have you muted yourself? You're just laughing to yourself.
I laugh. I'm wheezing. There we go.
He's got a clapper mic.
It featured enhanced graphics and several gameplay changes from its predecessor, though it reused a number of elements and character models, which the game's creators called a creative decision made necessary. Yeah.
Is it The Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask?
It is The Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask.
I could have guessed that.
Look. Well done, James. You've defied all odds to win the round.
Defied all odds.
Yeah.
Your technical difficulties, mate.
Fucking rigging.
Yeah. Defied Matthew Zamari's three favourite games. I was surprised
Majora's Mask. Yeah.
How was Mag not on the list?
Mag.
Yeah.
That's a good call. And with that, let's bring it then to what was this week's episode of the Press Start podcast. Subscribe to us on the podcast service of your choice. Follow us at press.au and visit the site at pressstart.com.au. We've been joined today by Shannon.
You can follow me at Shat.
Shat.
I don't speak. I don't know why. Follow me at shatcake_ on Twitter.
We've also been joined today by Brody.
Thanks. You can follow me on most things at Brody_DG.
And taking home the points today, it was James.
Yes. You can find me on Twitter at James, @JAMZ.
And I've been your host, Ewan Roxburgh. You can follow me on Twitter at Ewan_Roxburgh. Thanks again for tuning in. And until next time, happy gaming.
Bye.
Bye.
Press Chat Podcast. So good.